You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Are there things like, and I realize it is controversial, it has huge environmental impacts, could the president possibly consider authorizing the Keystone Pipeline?
The president has said that all options are on the table, but we also need to make sure that we're not galloping after permanent solutions to immediate short-term problems where more strategic and tactical actions in the short term can make a difference.
BS. I'm pulling the BS card on that remark by Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. This is March 3rd, 2022. I'll remind you, we are live streaming as I speak at Larry Connors USA YouTube. A lot of folks enjoy watching, seeing what we're doing here on air as if it's a TV broadcast again, but for those of you listening, we'll make it entertaining for you and engaging as well. But again, we are live streaming at Larry Connors USA YouTube. So there's Buttigieg being asked in a most polite way with a smile from the the MSNBC anchor. I know it's controversial, but let me ask this. In other words, she's going to do the job of asking, but she's going to try to couch it like, I don't really want to. I know it's not going to sound good. Your answer can't really give the public what they want to hear. And it didn't, did it? All the options are on the table. But Buttigieg again said, we need to make sure we're not galloping after permanent solutions. I think we need permanent solutions. We had permanent solutions when we were oil independent. We did not have to rely on any oil from anyone under the Trump administration. Now, of course, we are still, as I speak, buying oil from Russia. I want you to remember something, and I want you to spread it to your friends and your family and those who are kind of indifferent, thinking, oh, this doesn't bother me, except at the gas pump. Every barrel of oil that we're getting from Russia at this point has allegorically has blood of Ukrainians in it. You should keep that in mind. If we shut off what we're getting from them, we could go to our strategic reserve. That is an option, obviously. We have done that to some extent. We're probably going to have to do it more. And when we do, the prices are probably going to go up. And I'm like you, you will be complaining. But I want you to keep in mind, do you want to complain or do you want to buy barrels of oil from Russia that basically contain Iranian, contain basically blood of Ukrainians? And what does it take for you to stand up and want to fight for this country? Look at what's happening in Ukraine right now. Young men, probably high school age even, are still in there. They're grabbing weapons. They want to stay and fight for their country. How many high school students do we have in this nation right now would be willing to take a stand against an armed force coming in? Because our schools are so messed up. The kids are so messed up, they don't be feeling guilty about being white or privileged or anything else that maybe they won't do anything. I've got coming up later in the next hour a piece I want to share with you from Dennis Prager on what we need to do in our schools right now. Dennis Prager of Salem Networks, Prager University that he founded, very brilliant man. I want to share what he had to say. Also a piece from The Spectator, talking about we need to teach our children that this country is worth fighting for. I don't think many of them think it is at this point. They're learning in Ukraine it is. I'm also going to have today as a guest John Malcolm from the Heritage Foundation, expert on constitutional law, and he says the Biden nominee, the woman he selected, he made it clear I'm going to select a black woman. He had narrowed it down to five, maybe then three. Well, the woman he selected and is nominating, according to Malcolm, is probably the most dangerous of all of them. She could destroy our Constitution if she has the opportunity. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
For years, I've told you, be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. That's because I know the excellent work Wellington does when it comes to making your home, your business, even hospitals safe. See, recently I asked Wellington to check a relative's home. The relative had been constantly sick. Doctors couldn't find a cause. I asked Tom Wellington, please check the house. After extensive testing, Wellington could rule out mold and other air and water toxins. Well, that was a major relief, and the negative results gave doctors added information. So when I encourage you to call Wellington, I mean it. Wellington, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. A-rated by the Better Business Bureau, Missouri and Illinois. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. I want you to know something special. John Beal Roofing constantly gives back to the community in so many ways, supporting more charities and good causes than any other local roofing company. Why? It's the right thing to do. Keep that in mind when you need a new roof, plus quality work at the lowest price, guaranteed. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Putin can't win. I mean, he's headed to one of two directions here. He's either headed towards a very costly military victory, or he's headed towards a quagmire in which it's his military can't achieve victory. If even the costly military victory, he's going to have to stay there forever and face an insurgency. He's not just fighting another military. He's fighting 40-something million people that don't want his forces there. And no matter what he does, he'll never be able to install some puppet traitor government that he can just get up and leave them behind, because the Ukrainians will overthrow him and kill those people.
Those are the words of Senator Marco Rubio, Republican, Florida. He's on the House, the Senate Intel Committee. And he's saying Putin cannot win. At some point, he's going to have to decide everything's under control, we're moving out, and it's not going to be, just like it wasn't with Afghanistan. And the quagmire, the phrase that haunted this nation since Vietnam, is now in his face. The battling and the fighting continues. The Russians have some enormous forces, but they're facing a resilient group of Ukrainians who say, this is our country, you're not taking it from us. The grim assessment coming out, though, is that we've had another peace talk apparently taking place, but nothing examined really out of it that's going to be of value, except maybe a human corridor will be allowed to open for folks who are trying to evacuate and trying to get out. There's still women and children trapped inside. But we also have calls for Macron and Putin to have another discussion. The French leader, see if he can find some way to bring it through. But now Russia has cut off a key Ukrainian city from the rest of the world by taking Mariupol. Mariupol is going to be a sign that the squeeze on Ukraine is going to worsen. In fact, the worst is yet to come, because by taking that area, they now basically are going to control all of the access to the Black Sea. But you heard Rubio mention that there's really not anything that Putin can overcome when it has to do with the will of the Ukrainian people. He also has to look at the will of the Russian people. And we continue to get stories out of Russia that many Russians are struggling to understand this war. They're saying, we did not choose to do this. Many of the troops on the front line, young soldiers, they weren't told they were going off to war. They were going on military maneuvers. That was documented in one cell phone that was captured from a dead Russian soldier. A message he'd sent his mother saying, I don't know, we're in a war. I did not expect this. People are throwing themselves under our tanks trying to stop us from coming in. We're shooting and bombing civilians. I want to come home. And many of the Russian troops probably have the same thought. These are conscripts. These are drafted, ordered to serve in the military. They didn't volunteer. That's what we have now in our nation, full volunteer military. We ended the draft as Vietnam wound down. You still have to register. If you're a young man, you must do so. But I don't expect to see us have to draft again. After 9/11, we didn't even have to draft. We had folks volunteering to go fight over there so it wouldn't come to our doorsteps again. So he's got to deal with his own people. And many of his own generals had advised Putin, this is not wise. It's going to be tougher than you think. Many who have known Putin for years and have seen him recently and comparing him to the past say he's changed, he's different. Rubio got asked that question, and he said, I think the guy is just, you know, he's into his 70s now. Maybe he feels he's got to maintain some kind of struggle for control. But there are limitations on him, and there are limitations on what the U.S. can do right now. The U.S. is not going to put boots on the ground in Ukraine. That's the intent, and I hope we hold to that. But we can't even put our fighter jets over Ukraine airspace to take out some of the Russian troops on the ground. That would be a violation. Some are saying that by the very fact that the U.S. is helping with the evacuations and sending supplies and food, that we are already directly involved in a war with Russia. That's the last thing we want. It's the last thing the world wants with both nations and their nuclear weapons. In fact, to that point, Senator Rubio was asked about just how close can we go in supporting a non-NATO nation as Ukraine without stepping over the red line.
An armed engagement between the United States and any NATO or any NATO country and Russia is World War III. So I don't think anyone is talking about it. And frankly, the Ukrainians are not asking for American troops. What they are asking for is that we continue to supply and to equip them. And I'm not saying that by any means this fight is over. I think the will to fight, which is one of the hardest things to measure in any conflict, is extraordinary on the Ukrainian side. There are real and growing questions about the morale and the technical capability, the logistical capability of the Russian forces. That said, if in fact Putin is able to achieve, for example, a military victory, that doesn't mean he's won. because he will face Ukrainians that will fight him, and we need to continue to provide them with whatever we can provide them with to carry that out. There will be a legitimate Ukrainian government, no matter what happens militarily on the ground, but I still think there's a lot of open questions about how long and how costly this is going to be for Vladimir Putin from a military standpoint within Ukraine. I think the costly war situation is probably his best-case scenario, and that's not a very good one.
The other part of the issue in the equation, while we're not allowed to engage Russia, because Ukraine is not a NATO nation. If it were, we would have to be there. But we are buying, as I said in the opening monologue, oil from Russia. I'm going to spend more time on that in the next hour, but I want to share something with you that crossed as we were beginning the program. We know congressional Republicans have been blasting Biden for domestic oil production restrictions while buying Russian oil. We know that. We voiced that as well here. But listen closely here. Hear this. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi now said she supports banning all Russian oil to the U.S. If Pelosi's ready to do it, Biden's going to have to do it, despite trying to also appease the progressives who want to basically make you pay so much at the pump that you realize, okay, I got to get an electric car. We're done with fossil fuels. Nancy Pelosi is saying, I'm all for it. Ban it. Texas Congressman Michael McCaul, the top Republican on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, said, the U.S. of America, we are importing Russian energy. This needs to stop. We are funding Putin's war machine, which, as I said in the opening, every barrel of oil we get from Russia now, basically, allegorically anyway, has blood of uranium, Ukrainians in it. We're going to get into that in more detail in the next hour. But there's another conflict zone which Biden tried to just, well, he did ignore the other day in the State of the Union, and yet it still is there, and people are trying to survive there, and there are Americans there which have been left and abandoned by this government, and there are members that supported our military that are still there because we abandoned them. I am, of course, talking about Afghanistan and what we were going to do to help make sure we got all Americans out. Biden said we'd get all the Americans out. We didn't. We'd also made promises to Afghans who were helping us in the fight against the Taliban. They knew they were doing so at great risk because if it was exposed and we had to leave, they and their families would be in danger. PBS, I'm going to give them credit for following a report of one Afghanistan man who served as an interpreter. Listen to this story.
For 4 years, Khan translated for U.S. combat forces. His visa application was approved but never finalized before the U.S. left Afghanistan, and all his emails to the State Department have gone unanswered.
I feel I did something wrong, and that's why maybe I'm left behind. Why did I help the U.S. Army? Why was I risking my whole life doing a job as interpreter? I feel I shouldn't have done this.
He didn't do anything wrong. He had a visa that had been approved. The paperwork just hadn't made its way through the State Department before we suddenly pulled out. And now the State Department won't even respond to him. That PBS report was talking about that Afghan's difficulties trying to get out right now, along with all the others. It's estimated that there are at least 60,000 we should have gotten out. And the State Department representative for Afghanistan, Thomas West, was saying what you just heard was not an uncommon story.
We're hearing this kind of message from a lot of Afghans who do feel in fear for their lives and want to leave. I personally served alongside many Afghans in Kunar, some of whom have made it out and others who've decided to stay behind or haven't yet found a way out. And I'll tell you that on a practical level, we are working day in and day out to try to identify practical solutions that will get modes of transportation out of Afghanistan resurrected.
I'm not going to debate that if they are working day in and day out trying to do that, but I don't see it happening. We have not been doing it. So the future, according again to the State Department representative for Afghanistan, Thomas West, the future still is not very bright.
We saw a very concerning statement from the Taliban spokesperson noting that Afghans will not be permitted to depart any longer. We haven't gotten an official communication in this regard, but it's a very worrying statement.
How would you characterize the situation there right now?
Well, I think for a lot of Afghans, it's a horrific situation. It's just an undeniable humanitarian catastrophe. You know, over half the population is experiencing emergency levels of food insecurity. They don't know where they're getting their next meal.
So there's another nation not under direct assault now by a military force like the Russians, but they're under the control of the Taliban. What a mess we have created, we, this administration, in 1 year's time. China is still watching, especially what's happening right now. But China might be learning a lesson. Stand by.
USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So I said that China is obviously watching what is happening with Russia and Ukraine because China has its visions upon Taiwan, Hong Kong. But in watching what's happening, China might be reevaluating. In the beginning, I think many of us had the belief, I was one of them, and I still won't say it's off the table. But that if this goes through as it was appearing in the beginning, it was going to reinforce how weak Biden is, and China would take advantage of it. And so would North Korea, and so would Iran. It would go on and on like that. But what is changing the landscape is what's happening in Ukraine among the Ukrainian people fighting back. They're getting arms, munitions, supplies from NATO countries, including the U.S., but it's all in their hands. And when you go to fight on someone's homeland, it becomes much more difficult, even if you are a so-called mighty Russian army, which it appears is not so mighty anymore, riddled with alcoholism, conscripts who don't even want to be in the military, much less now in the middle of a war that they didn't want, their families at home don't want. And Putin basically having his country shut off various sanctions. We should impose all of them. We shouldn't drip the sanctions, slap all of them, which means starting with we shut off our buying of oil. We're going to get into that more in the next hour. But China has so much it wants to do in an interchange with U.S. capitalism, as communists as they are, they've learned the value of the dollar and how it can be done and used, and also what they can gain intel-wise by having relationships with U.S. companies, especially if they're related to U.S. defense or space or things of that nature. The word came out the other day that China had urged Russia, don't do the invasion while the Beijing Olympics were still underway. Russia invaded the day after the Olympics ended. China has been trying to say it's going to be kind of neutral and also declared that its friendship with Russia has no limits. But there's a Wall Street Journal article out today that says basically while China said it had no limits, it's appearing that maybe there are limits. Part of it has to do, again, with the ripple effect that would happen to China if all these kinds of sanctions were imposed upon them. And they're actually getting an advantage over Russia at this point. There's a, in the Wall Street Journal, a Chinese specialist at a Washington think tank said elevating the partnership with Russia on the eve of its invasion of Ukraine was a massive foreign policy blunder by Premier Xi. The cost is very real for China. It's now exposing the limits of China's policy. No response from the Chinese foreign minister. But it's just a year ago, he was making remarks like, the East is rising, the West is in decline. And its economy was roaring back while much of us were battling COVID-19 that came out of Wuhan, China. This year, they're trying to, first of all, Premier Xi is trying to break with precedent and seek a third term in power. The economy in China is not that great right now, partly is because of his policies and the fact that China decided to place itself on the other side of the Western world. And yet it wants alliances still. So Russia might be, the Russia-Ukraine story might be teaching China, go back to Confucius and see what he's saying. Coming up, the woman President Biden has nominated for Supreme Court Justice is considered the most dangerous of all.
Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Ackerman Toyota believes when you need service, you want genuine parts, certified mechanics, no hidden cost. You get all of that with Ackerman Toyota. Plus, if you're ready for a new car or pre-owned, see what Ackerman has on the lot or what's coming. Ackerman Toyota, Hampton and Interstate 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. We are live streaming Larry Connors USA at Larry Connors USA YouTube channel. I'm watching some of those comments coming in. I'll try to share them as I can. Also our other platforms, Ron writing in, hey Larry, got you on YouTube today. Great. And another one was saying, I lost track of it. I can't find it. I've got so many platforms open here in front of me. Yeah, I got to make sure where I am. I do know the guest I've got coming up has something very special to say about Biden's Supreme Court nominee. Welcome back again. We've had him on numerous times before. John Malcolm, Vice President of the Center for Legal and Judicial Studies, oversees the Heritage Foundation work on understanding the Constitution. John, welcome aboard again, sir.
It's great to be with you, Larry.
I said before we went to break that the woman that Biden has nominated is perhaps the most dangerous of all of the women he was considering when it comes to protecting our Constitution. Was I overstating it?
Well, certainly among the three finalists, or the ones that were everybody was naming as the three finalists, she has a reputation for being the most liberal. There is a reason why the radical leftist group Demand Justice, which believes the court should be overtly political institutions, and they want to pack the Supreme Court. You know, they had a list of their preferred nominees, and of the three reputed finalists, Ketanji Brown Jackson was the only one of those three on the list. There were other people whose names were floated.
Right.
People like Sherrilyn Ifill, Melissa Murray, you know, others who have made more bombastic and radical statements than Ketanji Brown Jackson. But certainly of the three serious contenders, the left got their pick.
You, in a piece, this was written for the Daily Signal, wasn't it? The piece I've got in front of me here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're pointing out that I'm going to jump to the conclusion, then back it up, that the sound you hear may be racial dog whistles, but you need to look carefully to see who's doing the blowing. Explain that.
Sure. So there are a number of Democrats who are already labeling Republicans who question the bona fides of Judge Jackson as racist. People who said, look, the president engaged in identity politics by announcing when he was running for president, you know, elect me and I'm going to nominate a black woman.
That's right. One second. You know this. I just want to reaffirm for the audience that Reagan did the same thing. Trump did the same thing.
Yeah. No. That's true. And I have said that, and I said in this piece, I'm not a big fan of identity politics. I didn't really like it when Reagan did it. Trump, of course, was already president when he made that statement. But Reagan certainly did it while he was running for president. Look, I don't think that being a woman or African American, you know, those aren't job disqualifications. They are not job qualifications.
Right.
You know, they do not determine whether you're going to be a good judge or not. But the reason that I wrote that article, so you have people like Elizabeth Warren and, you know, Dick Durbin out there. I mean, so Elizabeth Warren said that racial dog whistles have gone directly to racial sirens. And I just wanted to have a reminder that, you know, it was the Democrats, for instance, that led the fight against Clarence Thomas when he was nominated to the Supreme Court. So Joe Biden, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, voted to confirm Thomas to the D.C. Circuit, but at the time said, well, you need to understand, if you get nominated to the Supreme Court, totally different ball game. And a year and a half later, he was nominated to the Supreme Court, and Biden led the fight against him. These same Democrats filibustered Janice Rogers Brown, California Supreme Court Justice, who was being nominated to the D.C. Circuit. Biden led that filibuster. At the time, she was widely rumored as a potential replacement for Sandra Day O'Connor, and he went on TV and said, well, if she gets nominated to that position, these were very, three times, very, very, very likely that she's going to be filibustered. The filibuster existed at the time for judicial nominations. It likely killed any chance that she had of being a Supreme Court nominee. And, of course, if she had been nominated to the high court and confirmed, she would have been the first African-American on the court, something that Joe Biden says is now long overdue. They also have a history of doing this with Hispanics. Joe Biden filibustered Miguel Estrada six times when he was going to be a member of the D.C. Circuit. And there was a leaked Democratic memo that said that they were very scared of Estrada because he's Latino and the Supreme Court and the White House appears to be grooming him for the Supreme Court. They didn't want a Republican president naming the first Hispanic to the Supreme Court. And I pointed out that under President Trump, he nominated 21 men and minorities to the appellate courts. They overwhelmingly voted against these nominees. Chuck Schumer tried to filibuster all of them, and he voted against 20 out of the 21.
And yet I thought they were all about having and empowering more minority groups and giving them such high positions, even if it's not the Supreme Court, an appellate court.
Yeah.
There's where you summed up that statement see who's blowing the racial whistle.
Right. And they want the kinds of minorities whom they want, people whom they suspect have a leftist bent, both in terms of their political ideology, but also in terms of how they would interpret statutes and the Constitution.
All right.
But
so
if a Republican president nominates somebody, they're not interested.
You're listening to John Malcolm with the Heritage Foundation. So let's focus just on Judge Kente Brown. Maybe I'm mispronouncing. I'm not trying to.
Ketanji. Yeah, Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Thank you. Right. Thank you, sir. Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. The issue with her as to why she could be extremely dangerous for our Constitution, our nation.
Well, look, when she was a judge, I'm not trying to use that, go that far, but when she was a judge.
Okay, I'll take the blame for that. I'll take
the blame. So she was a district court judge when she was in private practice, she wrote briefs on behalf of, you know, pro-abortion groups and whatnot, but she was an advocate then. She's been a judge since 2013, 2014, an Obama appointee, and only recently joined the D.C. Circuit. She ruled against the Trump administration and against President Trump personally a whole number of times. She was on immigration issues, on labor law issues. She issued very, very liberal opinions and was often reversed by the D.C. Circuit. There was one opinion in which she said that the Secretary of Homeland Security couldn't designate certain aliens for expedited removal from the country. And she was unanimously reversed by the D.C. Circuit.
By the D.C. Circuit Court? Now, that amazing.
Well, and it was an opinion written by, you know, a Democratic-appointed judge who said that the statute gave the Secretary of Homeland Security sole and unreviewable discretion to make these kinds of determinations. She did the same thing in labor law cases, including her first majority opinion on the D.C. Circuit herself, was striking down, you know, rulings that had been made by the federal, you know, by the Federal Labor Relations Authority under President Trump. So I think there's a real suspicion that she's going to be, you know, a reliably liberal vote on all the issues that sort of count. But we will see how she answers the questions. One thing that I find very troubling, actually, so she's been a judge for 9 years. When she was elevated to the D.C. Circuit last year, they asked her, what's your judicial philosophy? Are you an originalist, living constitutionalist? She said, well, I don't really have a judicial philosophy per se. I just sort of follow what the Supreme Court tells me to do. That's a rather shocking answer for somebody who's been a federal judge for 9 years. And, of course, if she's on the Supreme Court, she doesn't have to listen to what the Supreme Court has to say. She gets to be one of the nine people deciding things. Right. And so she really needs to be asked some serious questions about what is her judicial philosophy.
So how far different would she be than Breyer?
Well, Breyer was a fairly, you know, reliably liberal vote on most issues, except for two, on criminal law issues. He had been a sentencing commissioner. He often sided with the government. And in business disputes, he'd been an antitrust professor. In fact, he was my antitrust professor in law school. He often sided with businesses. I am not so sure you were going to see that from Ketanji Brown Jackson. And on all the other issues, abortion, death penalty, racial preferences, all that stuff, Justice Breyer was a pretty reliable liberal vote, and she probably will be too.
So, in the last minute or so,
yeah,
getting her on the nomination and going through the process, we'll see how it breaks out. I don't expect, and I hope Republicans don't try to do the nonsense, rumored gossip attacks on her that we saw against Kavanaugh and others. But the other thing being, even if she's on the court, does that mean the Democrats are going to be satisfied with not expanding the court, adding more?
Very good question.
Stupid
question. I think the answer.
Yeah, Larry. Good.
Yeah,
I heard that in your laugh. Good question, Larry. Kind of stupid, but go ahead.
No, 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 no. It's a very good question. I actually think that they're not going to be satisfied with the court at nine. And, you know, the Supreme Court's now going to decide a number of very important cases involving abortion, the Second Amendment, religious liberty issues, racial preferences in college admissions. And I predict that if some of those decisions do not go the way the left likes them, you're going to have renewed calls to pack the court. The confirmation hearing is now already scheduled for March 21st, lightning fast. It should last 4 days. And I agree with you. There's not going to be any of the character assassination stuff that happened with Brett Kavanaugh, Clarence Thomas. They'll be respectful, but they should ask tough questions of the nominee.
Absolutely, absolutely. John, I always appreciate having you on board. I thank you for your time, sir.
My pleasure, Larry. Good to be with you.
You bet. John Malcolm with the Heritage Foundation. One of the cases, of course, that could come up for the Supreme Court, rigged elections. Speaking of rigged elections, Larry, what about Wisconsin? What happened? Stand by for that story.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Never would have hitchhiked to Birmingham if it hadn't been for love. Never would have called the train to Louisiana if it hadn't been for love. Never would have run through the blinding rain without $1 to my name if it hadn't been, if it hadn't been for love. Never would have seen the trouble that I'm in if it hadn't been.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. Live streaming at Larry Connors USA YouTube. Live streaming, Larry Connors USA YouTube. Remember, you can subscribe to our YouTube channel or our podcast. Get everything for free delivered directly to you. So for those of you who miss it live, you get it immediately anyway. Check it when you can. The Brennan Center for Justice is considered a part of a New York University School of Law that's nonprofit, but it leans liberal considerably. Now, with that in mind, I just told you it leans liberal. I want to share something here with you. The Brennan Justice Department wrote a piece titled "The Myth of Voter Fraud," talking about politicians at all levels of government have repeatedly, falsely claimed the 2016, the 2018, 2020 elections were marred by large numbers of people voting that were cheating. 2016, of course, when Trump came in against Hillary. Well, but you were not allowed to say anything about fraud, remember? And yet the Brennan Center is saying that it was all a myth anyway. Here's what's getting ready to happen. The other day, by the way, I'm at a poker tournament, and a guy comes up to me, introduces me to, I think his, might have been his father. And he said, tell him that there's, you know, Trump got defeated by a wide fraud conspiracy. I said, well, I can't really go and say that directly. Was there fraud? I'm convinced there was. Were there cases where things were not handled properly? I think so, and it happens in every election. To what extent and how much, that's the issue. Well, there may be more evidence beginning to come out, and at the same time, we're seeing the left push back again. Former AG Barr is being quoted by NBC News as saying, Trump got enraged after he is being told election fraud doesn't really exist. In fact, the Daily Mail reports that Barr says Trump fired him on the spot when he said that your election fraud claims, talking about Trump, are not real. They don't have any basis for it. And NBC is now planning a primetime William Barr special. Of course. Why not? And Michigan Republicans winning primaries after echoing false vote fraud claims. They say, see, that proves there's no fraud. No, it proves in that case maybe there wasn't. Let me give you a case that bears a little closer inspect. And a lot of this happens on a continuous basis, especially in California, where they allow vote harvesting. This is a piece prepared by Margot Cleveland with The Federalist. I give her the credit for it. She did all the work on it. She's talking about what Special Counsel Michael Gableman found. He vetted more than 90 nursing homes in five different counties in Wisconsin. 90 nursing homes, five different counties, and he concluded, his words, quote, widespread election fraud. He said it was rampant fraud and abuse occurring statewide at Wisconsin's nursing homes and other residential care facilities. That report was filed a couple of days ago with the Wisconsin Assembly. I just haven't had time to get to it. And that conclusion represents but one of the key findings of election irregularities in that nearly 150-page report that also confirmed that the Racine County Sheriff's Office last fall found fraud at nursing homes in Wisconsin. So the Wisconsin Assembly appointed a retired state Supreme Court Justice, Michael Gableman, to investigate. He goes out and he checks 90 different nursing homes in five different counties and finds, yeah, the folks did not vote for whom they were put down as voting for. Maybe they didn't vote at all. And he says, under election code, these personally delivered ballots to any residents who wish to vote didn't have to witness it. By law, only a relative or an SVD, that is a special voting deputy, to oversee the voting. He said that didn't happen. District attorney, less than a week after the sheriff's county's office announced it had found such evidence, the district attorney refused to even investigate. If that's just the state of Wisconsin, just 90 nursing homes in just five counties, and he finds, quote, rampant, widespread fraud. You want to do the math, multiply it out by 50 states, and then by the number of nursing homes and the number of ballots that were collected and harvested. I will never say that this last election was absolutely correct. I do say let's focus on going forward. That's the key. Coming up in the next hour is something very special. Our kids need to be taught again to love our country.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.